CliffCentral.com.
Hi guys, my name is Mbali Njomane and welcome to the Made Sessions with Cliff Central. This is my co-host, Tuliza Cindy.
Hi everyone.
And if you don't already know what the Made Sessions are, they're a series of conversations with domestic workers and cleaners on a range of issues that make South African life. These women have such a unique omnipresence in all our lives, and we believe that they're extremely important social commentators with the power to help us to understand who we are as South Africans. So, without further ado, Tuliza, please introduce our guest today.
So we've got back our very perfect resident advisor, Susanna Mandla. And she's got over 20 years of experience as a domestic worker. And in particular, she really loves to take care of children. She's got great maternal instincts. She treats her employers' children as her own. And if she sort of had it her way, she would just take care of children. So she's got great insights on children.
Okay. Mandla, do you want to say hi?
Hi, everyone.
Thanks. So we like to start the show off with a question that is strange, improbable, and off topic, just to get the brain juices going. But also, it helps us to get to know our guests a little bit better and how they see the world. So our warm-up question for you today, Mandla, is, would you rather put an end to world hatred or world hunger? Hatred or hunger?
I think I'd rather put end to hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Because hatred is not good. People could kill each other through hatred.
Okay, so you feel like it's worse than hunger then, hey?
Yeah, it is worse than hunger. Because, you know, when people are hating each other, they'll have this something in their minds to kill other people because they hate them.
Okay, and that actually might end up killing more people than hunger does. It's true.
Yeah.
Like wars, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's a good point. And actually, you know, a lot of people say that hunger is the worst form of violence. I say hunger is the worst form of hatred because it comes out of indifference, right? It comes out of not caring to do anything about it. And for me, not caring to do anything, not caring to act at all, is the most dangerous kind of hatred. So I think I agree with you.
Indifference.
Yes.
Apathy. Yeah.
Absolutely. Awesome. So ladies, let's dig in. Today's show is called Raising South Africans.
Part one. Yeah.
Thank you. Tools, won't you expand a little on the discussion ahead?
So I just want to break down a bit the relevance of this topic. So as of 2015, we are said to have 1 million domestic workers in our country. A million, yeah.
Sure.
And as of 2000...
I'd be interested to work out that ratio.
Well, this is actually what I did.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Of course you did. Don't
so,
mind me.
So again, the statistics are sort of few and far between, but as of 2006, there were around 12.5 million households in the middle income bracket in our country. So that means on average, a quarter of our very active workforce, whose contribution lies in leaving their homes and being away from their children to make money, are relying on alternative means for their children to be looked after, and that comes in the form of domestic workers.
Shucks.
So it's a quarter of our middle income bracket. And on top of this, a maid's exposure to children are also extended to the lower class because, for the most part, their children lie in the lower class brackets as well. And the upper class also use maids to take care of their children. So their access to children really stretches quite far in our country's demographic. So they're such an incredible resource to understanding children a bit better and how they're being raised in our country.
Amazing. Absolutely, 100% true. And so that's why we think this is a very important conversation to have.
Absolutely.
And we also hope that it'll be insightful not just to parents or to future parents, but to us all as we were once children. And to anyone seeking to explore the implications of how a society raises its children. Right? Okay, ladies. So... firstly, Mandla, what we'd like to know from you is, what do you think nowadays is the largest threat to good parenting?
You know, I think parents spend a lot of time away from children, like at work. They don't have enough time to have with their children. So children are always left behind with their minder or their helper. And parents go to work in the morning, come back at night, and the following morning is the same thing. It's an ongoing thing. It doesn't stop. So I think parents don't have enough time with their children.
Okay. I think that's true, actually. Especially given the statistics that you just gave us, Tools.
Yeah, do you think it's particularly because of time that, you know, they spend away? Or do you think that even when they are with their children that they, you know, this there isn't enough time?
So you're talking about the quality of time, right? So actually, what do you think needs to change about parents' lifestyles for them to spend more time with their kids?
I think parents should, when they are off work, they should have more time with their children. Have time to sit down with their children. Talk to their children. Discuss things. Ask their children what's happening in their life.
Yeah.
I think parents should know each and everything what their children are up to. But, you know, because parents, they are always away. The time when they're at home, they don't have, they just take children to the movies.
Right.
And go and watch movies. At the movies, they're just sitting there watching the screen. They're not talking.
Yeah.
There isn't that connection that a parent have to talk with the child.
So you mother would say
and daughter
no technology.
Or father and daughter or father and son sitting down and talking.
No technology, hey?
No technology. I think they should have a time, maybe they should call it like a family time, where they switch off the TVs, switch off their cell phones, and sit down and talk to their children.
Okay. So essentially a parent's presence isn't the same as their engagement with their child.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of quantity and quality, right?
Okay.
That's a great observation.
That's really wonderful. And, you know, there's been so many studies about the modern mother and the millennial mother. That's what they call us now. And they say that one of the most peculiar conditions that they found with the modern mother is that they want to be younger. Mothers want to be younger. Do you think that it affects parenting in any way? And if you think it does, how does it affect parenting for a mother to want to be younger?
Yeah, and actually, I think you've mentioned this before. I think one of the first conversations we had with you, you spoke about the one thing you'd noticed culturally in Johannesburg that shocked you was that everyone was trying to be younger. And actually, you would often walk up to a woman who was older than you and say, ma, a woman in her 60s, for instance. And then she'd be like, oh, umagabani. You know what I mean? She'd be like, don't call me that.
And you also mentioned how mother and daughter can be walking together, and often the mother wants to be called sister.
So how do you think? How do you think this is affecting parenting?
I think it is really affecting parenting, because if you are a parent, you have to be a parent. If you are walking in the street with your daughter or your son, you have to be comfortable to introduce her as your son, to introduce her as your daughter,
right?
And introduce him as your son. Don't feel embarrassed, because if you are a parent, you are there to guide your daughter or your son as a parent, not as someone who is the same age with her. You have been a young girl as well before, or a young boy before. Now it's your child is 10. You have to give them their time. And you stay as an old person as you are.
It's true, though. Women are looking more and more like their daughters or like their son's girlfriends.
Yeah, they do. They dress the same as their daughters. You can't tell which is the mother and which is the daughter.
But you know what, actually? It's the other way around as well. It's vice versa. Because I think the problem is that children are looking and acting older and older. And then parents, like we're saying, are looking and acting younger and younger. So both ways, it's closing the cultural and the age gap. between them. And I mean, growing up, I never liked the same things that my parents did. You know, even as an adolescent, for me, they lived in a completely different world. And they still do. But with parents and kids nowadays, that's no longer the case. They go to the same stores. They use the same gadgets. They like similar music. And do a lot of the same stuff. Okay, so here's here's an anecdote from the other day. I was at Tasha's the other day. Manda, do you know what Tasha's is? Tasha's is, it's a restaurant. It's a cafe. It's an upmarket cafe.
Okay.
For adults, right?
Okay.
Or at least I thought. So I was there with my family the other day. And we were horrified to realize that 70% of the tables at Tasha's at about 8 p.m. on a Saturday were teenagers dining with their friends. And it also took us a really long time to notice because they blended so well into the environment, right?
Yeah.
With their iPhones and their Gucci and credit cards, as well as the way they were addressing the waiters, you know, the clicking of the fingers. Friends, it was so gross. It was so gross. I was actually, I was really disturbed. I don't know.
I mean, there's also the whole anti-aging movement, which is, it's not anything to...
And actually, the only thing that made us look up was the fact that the... Sorry, I'll let you get...
No problem.
The only thing that made us look up were the elevated noise levels, because children are playful, so you can hear when they're around. But apart from the noise levels, they looked exactly like grown-ups. And I even felt younger than them because I was there with my mom, right? And I honestly felt like they were they were judging me, you know? And I swear, it looked like Spur, but the kids were adults. And so I think it's right what Mandela's saying about how we're closing the age gap and how dangerous it is for parenting.
And so essentially, if your parent looks like your peer, how do you discipline?
It's true.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tools, what were you saying about anti-aging?
Well, I mean, I think anti-aging also contributes to that, which we see on TV all the time. We see anti-aging creams, anti-aging spas, and makeup that makes us look younger, all those sort of things. And, you know, Cameron Diaz, in an interview, she had said how it's... You know, the pressure on women to be young is so unreasonable that it actually strips you of the honor that you get to carry by being older, by having made it through a lot to get to where you are. But it doesn't just strip you of, you know, the physical. It's also the aspects of your character that you have to pretend you don't have to hide your maturity. And she was saying how it's quite crazy because she feels like she's failed if she didn't remain 25 years old for the rest of her life, or if at 40 years old she doesn't look like she's 25. And so... You know, it's difficult to feel like you can win if you've essentially haven't been able to define nature.
It's crazy.
You know, so the pressure is so entrenched to look young, and it's reinforced through a culture, you know, that understands that women's beauty is only beauty when it is young.
And wisdom, right, is a thing of maturity.
Mm. Exactly.
So if you're talking about having to hold back the aspects of your personality that reveal your age, you're holding back wisdom. Mm. Wisdom is such an important part of growing and nurturing a society. You know,
and
of
so
human
imagine,
progress.
So imagine if mothers are doing that, withholding the maturity and
pretending they don't know
that comes
any better,
with being
just to
older.
Come across as cool and to fit in with their kids.
Yes.
Sure. Scary,
that's
hey?
That's joking.
It's scary. It's really, really scary. Okay. But let's move on. Let's talk discipline now. Mandla, how do you feel about how parents are enforcing discipline nowadays?
I think parents are not tough enough. You know, they don't... I don't think they're disciplining it the right way. I think they're always going... They think they're doing it right, but I think it's wrong. They're doing it the wrong way.
How are they doing it?
Because if a child has done something wrong, you should, as a parent, show that this is wrong. Mm. You mustn't do this.
Mm.
Or else you punish him or you take something away from him that, you know, because you have done this and this and this, I'm going to take your cell phone away.
Yeah.
I'm going to take your PlayStation away.
Mm.
And you must mean it that, you know, what you are saying, it's what you are going to do. Not say it now, I'm going to take your cell phone. Then in 2 minutes' time, you give it back to him.
Mm.
A child won't learn. Because tomorrow he's going to do the same thing, knowing that, okay, my parent is going to take it for 5 minutes and give it back to me again.
But the other thing I've noticed that mothers do, and I actually think it's mothers in particular, that's just my observation.
Mm.
But you'll tell us later. I don't know. We'll kind of address the difference between mothers and fathers.
Fathers. Mm.
But the other thing I've observed is that instead of punishing a child for doing something wrong, what they do is they'll give them a treat so they'll stop misbehaving.
Yes.
So if you stop misbehaving,
I'll give you
something nice.
Yes, I'll do this. It's like bribing him.
Bribing, that's exactly what it is.
It's like bribing him.
Yeah.
Instead of showing him that what you have done is wrong, they are bribing their kids. And kids will never learn. The right way. You're teaching them the wrong way.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I guess there's two ways to get results from people, right? You can get results through incentives or you can get results through disincentives. So my thing is that in the real world, you don't get rewarded for doing
the right thing.
The right thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
You just have to do it.
Right? You don't get rewarded for doing a decent thing. Mm. You know, it's just common courtesy. So if you're teaching a child that they're always going to get something for not doing a bad thing, then you're actually misleading them.
Mm.
Yeah. Because the truth is, in the real world, on the other hand, if you misbehave, you have to pay for it. There are consequences.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so something is given when you do bad, essentially, and it's consequence. So it's a disincentive.
Mm.
But something isn't given when you do.
I mean, unless you do exceedingly well.
Yeah.
And look, there's an exception to every rule, right? So, I mean, I suppose in the event of corruption and inequality, you don't always have to suffer a consequence. But in general, if you do something bad in the real world, you don't. I mean, there's a price that you have to pay.
Yes.
Okay, so now let's touch on the thing I was saying about mothers and fathers. Do you find that mothers and fathers agree on how to discipline their kids?
Most of the times they don't.
They don't?
No, they don't. They don't, because you find that if someone says that if the child has done something wrong and the other parent wants to discipline him, the other one will just say, just leave him. Oh, just leave him. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's wrong to disagree in front of the child. Parents should, if they discipline the child, they should agree on what punishment they are giving that child together.
Mm.
And I found that sometimes they agree in front of the child sometimes, but when the other parent is not there, the other parent will go and get the cell phone and give back to the child, which has been taken away from.
They're playing favorites.
Yes.
Interesting.
Then you can use it until the time when the other parent is coming. Five minutes.
But let's tell the truth. Which is the parent that's most likely to do that? The mother. Or the mother.
Yeah. The mother. Oh. Yes. The mother is always. They will always time. They will look at the time. Your dad is coming in 5 minutes. So take this thing back to where your dad left it. Which is wrong, because now the child is going to take sides. That, you know, my mom loves me, my daddy doesn't love me.
Yes.
Because my daddy disciplines me, because my daddy takes my cell phone away, my daddy takes the PlayStation away from me, and my mom gives it back to me when my daddy is not there. That is wrong. That is really, really wrong parenting.
So you think men are being painted wrongly as these figures of authority and fear, you know, people who the kids should be scared of. Is that right? So if you're saying that, you know, the parent, the mom will say 5 minutes before the dad comes home, quickly go put this thing away.
Yeah. I think that's it, that the mother is creating that idea in the child's mind that the father is someone who is there to give authority or be tough on the child.
They should alternate, right? So that they can have an equal relationship with the child. So the father should sometimes play that role, but also sometimes give love.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And and for the mother
but,
as well.
But you know, if he takes this stuff from the child as punishment, it doesn't mean that he is not loving the child.
It's true.
It's just discipline.
It's true.
But essentially, it just looks like it's not love because the mother is giving the things back.
Exactly. Yes. Because of the inconsistency.
Yes. So it's really just
it's creating a good guy, bad guy scenario.
Yes.
Wow. That's very interesting.
Sure.
And actually, then on that point, because, you know, essentially then they're leaving a gap in discipline, you know, if they're hearing one thing and then seeing another thing.
Yeah.
And do you think that this is maybe contributing to children becoming more rude to their parents, cheekier, more stubborn? You know, like we see them in toy stores and they scream and they want to have what they want to have. And
yeah.
So what do you think contributes to them being more rude and...
I think the other stuff is that the disagreement of the parents in front of the child, that the other child is pulling on the left side and the other parent is pulling on the right side, which is wrong. Mm. Because I think as parents, they should just come together
but also
and agree on one thing. If it is a discipline, it's discipline. If you are not going to have your cell phone for a week, it has to be for a week. Not like during the day, the mother will give it back. Then it is 5 o'clock, they will put it back at the place where it was before.
But Tulisa is actually also touching on something very interesting, right? I think kids are getting stronger and stronger personalities, and they're losing their boundaries.
Yes, they are.
And I think there must be more to that. There must be something else that's happening that's making kids like this, that's making kids almost inappropriate. And disrespectful in some ways.
I think I'll put that on parents as well.
Yeah.
Again, yes. Because, you know, parents, even parents, you know, they start screaming and shouting in front of the kids.
Mm.
You know, a child can learn bad behavior so quick like this.
Mm.
If they shout like this, like that, in front of her or him, he thinks that it is the right way to go. Even if they are in the shops, they will shout and scream.
Scream at each other, hey?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, the kids will think that, okay, this is the way to go. And if a child wants something at home, their parents don't say no. They just give and give. That's why if they go to the shops, they want things from the shelves. If the parent says no, the child will start stand her ground. They say,
so
why?
Let's talk about this shouting, though. The shouting in front of children.
Yeah.
Are they arguing among themselves? Even if it's not about the child, are they having these very grown-up arguments between themselves around the child?
Yeah. They'll do that in front of the child. The child is there. The parents are shouting. And sometimes the child will just close her ears, run to her bedroom, close the door.
Do you think parents don't realize how much a child hears and sees?
Mm. I think parents sometimes they just take for granted that, you know, the child is still young, doesn't know, things like that. Mm-hmm. Not realizing that children know much more than they think.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And what do you think TV, for instance, has to do with shaping children and their characters?
Nowadays. I think TV nowadays is... most of the stuff the children are watching, they are not good for the children.
Mm.
And parents are not monitoring their children what they are watching on TV. Because you'll find like an 8-year-old child watching something which is, says no under 18.
Wow.
Wow.
And the parents are not, they don't even care. Because, you know, children nowadays, it's not like years before that the TV was in the sitting room only.
Mm.
Now each and every bedroom have got a TV.
But also they're getting smarter and smarter.
Yes, yes, they do. They
about
do.
Technology. And it's actually not even just television.
Yes,
they do. It's internet.
Yes, they do.
And then maybe it goes back to what you were saying about parents and absenteeism. It's just the lack of time to monitor.
Yes, they don't
the
care.
The content that your child is consuming.
Yes, sometimes we can say it's work, but you know, if you look at it, parents, they don't care. Because even if they are at home, they don't have time to go in their children's rooms and see what's going on.
Wow. Mm. Wow. And for me, it's not just restricted to entertainment television, where kids are exposed to stuff like sex and violence. Mm-hmm. Take the news, for instance. You know, I know we all think the news is such a positive thing. But the news is not harmless, particularly not for kids. And as a kid, my parents used to watch the news around me all the time. Or if I was in the car, they would listen to talk radio. And even though I was bored out of my mind, I still absorb stuff. Guys, the news is deep, and you've really got to talk to your kids about what they're hearing.
Yeah,
true. And I think that the issue here is that it's that kids are not being engaged on the things that they're being exposed to. The fact is, like you were saying, Mandla, children are candidate adults. Right? And I'm going to say it again so people actually really hear it. Children are candidate adults. That means they will eventually be adults. And this is important because it's important to treat them that way. Because so much of our constitution and who we are as adults is founded in our childhood. And if you'll bear with me, I'm just going to harp on a bit here. I hate when people talk down to children. I don't know if you agree. But when they use that voice, oh, little Johnny, oh, little Susanna, you're so cute. Come here. You know, oh, I don't know. You're so smart, clever girl. It's just, honestly, it's so belittling. It's so belittling to a child. The second thing I hate is when parents and people in general let kids get away with murder because they're children. Oh no, man, she's just a child. She doesn't know what she's saying. Mm. Bullshit.
She knows what she's saying.
She knows exactly what you're saying. And what you're doing is you're destroying her accountability as a human being.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. And kids, like you were saying earlier, are way smarter than what we think.
Yeah.
And they know that they are, and they use that. Mm. And more often than not, they know the difference between right and wrong. But they also know that they can pretend not to know the difference between right and wrong.
Yes, they've got a free pass.
Mm. Absolutely. And they're so aware of that free pass. And that's what people don't realize. And that's why they can turn into such evil geniuses. And so a child can be sitting in a conversation with adults or among adults and pretend to be oblivious when they actually aren't. Exactly. I know this because as a child...
sit there innocently. Yeah.
No, but we all did it, guys. As a child, I loved grown-up conversations. I really did. And I'd always pretend not to pay attention so that the grown-ups wouldn't make me leave.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, so I also used to do that.
And I think everyone does. And it's almost like when parents grow up, they forget what they did as children. We get such amnesia, I think, for the way that we were as kids. Anyway, so I used to love to do that, but the difference with me was that I was too feisty and opinionated not to eventually join the conversation. So I'd always blurt something out by mistake and then they'd realize and I'd be busted, you know, and they'd give me a bit of a talking to. But the main thing they would do, my parents, my aunts, my uncles, when they realized that I was listening, they would make sure to engage me on everything that I was thinking and everything that I was saying. Mm. And if that hadn't happened, my child mind would have taken what they said and reproduced it in a very perverse and a childish way.
Yes.
Right? Which is exactly what happens when kids repeat what their parents are saying.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or what they see on television. Mm. Exactly. Yeah. It's because they're overexposed to this stuff, but they're underengaged on what their brains are picking up.
Mm. Because they're so stuck on their cell phones or TV.
So they're regurgitating things. They're reproducing things that their minds aren't mature enough to reason. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yes, absolutely. Mm.
Anyway, moving on. Mandla, what do you think the role of domestic workers is in raising our children?
I think domestic workers play a huge role in raising children.
I like how you emphasize that.
Huge.
Yes, it's a very huge role.
Yes.
Because, you know, they're always there with the children when parents are not there. They woke up in the morning, they go to work, children are left at home with a domestic worker.
Yes.
Whatever children do, the domestic workers are the first ones who are going to know that this child is up to something. But, you know, sometimes as domestic workers, you don't say anything.
So what sorts of things, for instance?
I'll say, like, you know, if a child starts smoking, a domestic worker is the first one to know.
Yeah.
They start, like, drinking, bringing girls at home or boys at home. You are the first person to know. And parents, they don't know. They don't even know.
Sure.
So, why wouldn't you tell the parent whatever you discover of the child doing?
Yeah, it sounds to me like there's a breakdown in the relationship between you and the parent.
You know, what I think is that, you know, employers should learn to build a good relationship between them and their helpers. Because you find that sometimes a helper will say, like, you know, your child is doing this, or sometimes I think there is something wrong with your child. Maybe keep an eye on him or her. Then the reply will come, who are you to tell me what to do with my child?
Oh, wow.
So as a domestic worker, if you have had something like that, in future you see this child, now he's smoking, he's drinking, he's bringing girls or boys at home, closing the door to the bedroom. You don't say anything because...
And the bedroom, right?
Yes. Because you don't... You are just a domestic worker.
And I like what you said earlier about the bedroom, about children's bedrooms, and how you go into a child's bedroom every single day.
Yeah.
And the parent will never go in.
Yeah. You go in there every day. You clean underneath the bed. You clean underneath the couches. You clean where the TV is, where the CDs, and you find cigarettes behind there.
You know, I'm starting to think back to the things that I may have hidden.
you find a bottle of beer behind the TV or DVD player, things like that. And the parents don't know about this. And you can't tell. And then when they think of going in the child's room, they'll just go there and sit on the bed and start chatting. They don't look around.
Yeah. Wow.
So if there is a good relationship between an employer and the helper, those things, they might find it early. Because sometimes the parents get shocked when the child is expelled at school because he's been caught smoking.
Yeah,
and they get shocked because they don't know. But the helper have known for years that this child is smoking, drinking, he's bringing girls at home or boys at home when you are not there.
My goodness.
But you can't tell.
Yeah. So in a way, the child actually relies on you not having a good relationship with their parent to get away with things.
Yes, they take advantage of that because you're not going to say anything to my parents because you don't have that close relationship with your employers. So you just keep quiet.
And you know, you also said something about, you know, when you're reprimanded. So when the madam is talking to you about leaving her child alone, she usually does it in front of the child. So the child, you know, can see that they can disrespect you.
Yeah, that's what I want to know. I want to know what are employers doing wrong? What about this relationship between domestic worker and employer is not being nurtured? What kinds of behaviors?
It's because, you know, the employers, they'll shout at the domestic worker in front of the children. And how are the children going to respect this person? Let alone if it is the child who's done something, like, you know, children will swear sometimes at you. Then you'll tell the
employer. Swear?
Yes.
What kinds of things?
Oh, there are lots of things domestic workers are called by the children. They'll call you are an asshole.
What?
You are a fucking bitch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Useless.
Wow.
Dumb. Yeah.
Those
stupid
words.
Yes.
No,
then the parent comes from work.
Wait, how do you respond to that when it happens? How do you feel?
You just stand there. You don't know what to do because when you are employed, you are told that you are not supposed to reprimand the child. You're not supposed to smack the child because he or she is not your child. You have to tell the parents. But they come from work, you tell them, you know, this child is swearing at me. He said this and that. They call that child, they go to the bedroom and close the door. You don't know what is said in that room. And the child comes and, you know, put her hands on her waist and say, sorry. Like that, as if it doesn't mean it.
Mm. I actually want... Sorry.
To my opinion, I think parents, what they do to the children, they should do it to domestic workers as well. If there is something wrong, you call your employer and go to that room and close the door and talk to your employer away from your children so that the children will respect that employee. They will respect her. Because if you shout it in front of the children, now they take it in their minds that, you know, we have to shout this. So that's why they call them all this sort of
in
names.
In regards to all these hateful things that they say, I actually just want to expand on what I was saying maybe earlier. Again, kids are candidate adults. So it is criminal to let them get away with spewing prejudice or hatred because they're kids. I don't know how many times I've heard a child say something hateful. I mean, not quite that bad. I'm actually genuinely shocked. But I don't know how many times I've heard a child say something hateful only for their parent to go, ach, man, don't take it personally. Yeah. They're just kids.
Yeah.
No,
it always
guys,
comes
no.
out like that.
Hell no, because...
So that you feel bad yourself that, oh, it's a child.
But the other thing is that they then go, the kids themselves, they go, they take that very excuse to the playground and they breed hatred because they think teasing is playful. But it's not. Hatred is not playful.
No, it's not.
And it's also not enough just to tell your child, don't say that. It's not nice. Right?
You hear that a lot.
A lot.
It's not enough. It's a cop out. You've got to tell your child, don't think that. It's not nice.
And also explain why that shouldn't be a thought.
Explain why they shouldn't think that. Yes. And then have them reason it back to you. So you make sure they understand. Because that's how you raise candidate adults. Because if you don't do that, you end up with a society of grown-ups who know the right thing to say, but not the right thing to think. And I give you South Africa in 2016. That's the problem. I'm telling you, that's the problem. We all know exactly what not to say to each other or about each other. But for some reason, we don't have a cooking clue why. And we're more upset all the time with what everyone is saying. And not where it's coming from. We're more upset with words than we are with values. And for me, having a filter is not the same as having a value system.
Absolutely.
And I blame parents for treating their kids like morons. I really, really do. Yeah.
And parents should realize that those people are working for them.
Yes.
They are parents as well.
Absolutely.
They have got children as well.
Yes.
So they know what to do with children.
And you know, actually, I just want to add on to the point of, you know, the sort of dignity that the child is treated with by closing the door and then they are reprimanded inside a room versus you where you are reprimanded outside and exposed. And I mean, as a spatial practitioner, as an architect, that those are the sort of ways that you either uphold dignity or you strip it away from someone. And it's literally as simple as the difference between having a door between you or not. And those are the extremely subtle ways that we enforce very bad habits through the practice of using space. And it's those sort of nuances that I think we have to start bringing to light, you know, because although something is constructed, it doesn't mean that it is used neutrally. We fill it with things. And so literally the use of a door determines whether you treat someone with dignity or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely agree with you.
So in which ways, Mandla, do you think children through their behaviors expose their parents' decisions or their parents'
for who they are,
prejudices?
Right?
Yes.
So you were saying earlier about how we were talking about how kids are sponges and they repeat everything that that parents say. So I'm wondering if, you know, what are some other interesting things that you'll hear coming from the child? but from the parent, and you'll know.
Yeah, parents don't realize that, you know, children, when they leave them with their domestic worker, they come close to the, even if they sway and do things like that when they're angry, but there is a certain time when they are nice to those people. And, you know, he will say, you know, my mother said something like this to you about you last night, but they said I mustn't tell.
Oh, wow.
You see. And they will tell you this exactly in words.
Evil geniuses.
Yeah. But they said I mustn't tell you.
Wow. Yeah. What are some of the things that they say?
You know, like sometimes if they can't find something, they'll say you have stolen it.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. In front of the child.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. And
yeah. If like sometimes they'll come, they'll find the sugar basin. Maybe it's empty. Oh, you have taken, you are the one using too much sugar.
And they discuss these things at dinner.
Yes. When they're sitting there, the following morning, everything they've been saying about you, the child will tell you.
This is the beauty of
the
children,
parents,
though.
They don't know. Sometimes they will say, why are you walking around with a long face? They don't know that I know everything they've been talking up, they've been saying
See,
about me when I'm not there. From the child. Yeah.
Now I kind
because
of
now you're angry.
Yes.
But you can't ask them because you heard it from the child.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's brilliant, right? Because there's absolutely no censorship with kids.
Yeah.
It is not possible to have censorship with kids. And I approve of that. I think, I think they need to know their boundaries in terms of dignity and respecting people. But I also think that they can help to facilitate some justice in the world.
Yes, they're using their superpower for good.
That's brilliant.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, would you, you know, when it comes to voting, I mean, it's very close to voting season. It basically is voting season. Would you ever tell your child how to vote? Or who to vote for?
No. Why I'll not? Never do that.
Why not?
Because if he can vote, it means that he's an adult or she's an adult.
Yeah.
Can think for herself. I can't tell her, you have to vote. If I support a different party and he supports a different party, it's okay. He have each and everyone have to choose. Not this thing that, you know, in a family when we belong to a certain, when a parents belong to a certain party, they will want their children to support
that
the
is
party they are voting for. That's wrong.
I can attest to that.
That's wrong.
That is
children
that is
must choose because they're adults. If they can vote, they're adults.
Yes.
Yeah. My dad belonged to the ANC, and my mom supported my dad, and that's. You know, raises other questions around gender equality. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, she may have... I suppose everyone who came through the liberation struggle kind of supported the ANC. But there were alternatives. Mm. And I always felt that my mom supported my dad because he was a member of the ANC. And the ANC then became our party.
Yes.
As children as well. So when my brother and I registered to vote, it wasn't even a thought in my head, you know, at the time. And it actually... It took some time for me to really to interrogate it and to make up my own mind. But definitely the first time around, it was a family thing.
And I think sometimes it's not even that you support the ANC, but you don't support anything else, you know? Maybe as a family that you don't support.
But it's funny. It's funny, though, because there's also, I think, some, like, strange emotional blackmail that goes into it. No, because... I would just, for some reason, never have been able to live with myself if I, for instance, if I'd voted DA the first time. And even if I had really, really good reasons, I just would have seen my parents' faces and felt like I failed them, you know? And I don't think that's a good reason. You know, I have my issues. I would never vote DA. Well, I mean, actually, never say never. But that's not the point. The point is it shouldn't be about a family loyalty because that's actually quite twisted.
Yeah, it is. But actually, if anything, if you had to discuss, you know, voting and politics and democracy and those sort of things, what would you tell your children about the past?
Yes, yes. So we were actually, Tools and I were talking about this earlier, and we were very curious to find out from you, if you were a South African parent, what would you tell your children about our past? How would you explain it so it made sense to them? And I know you're not South African, so I don't expect you to.
But Zimbabwe also went from a state of colonialism to
had
democracy.
A similar past. So let's call it colonialism.
Mm.
Right, because apartheid was a form of colonialism. Mm. As a parent, how would you explain that past?
I'll explain to them that, you know, it wasn't a good thing. You know, history has to be told.
Yeah,
we can't just sweep it under the carpet, even how bad it is. But the children must know their history, the history of their country. I'll tell them everything, what happened, that how the white people used to treat black people.
Mm.
That black people they had whatever jobs they did were chosen to them. There were certain jobs they couldn't do.
Mm.
There were certain places they couldn't go. Everything like that. I'll tell my children like that. And at the end, I'll say, even if it is bad like that, you have to learn to live together.
Mm.
You have to learn to do things together.
Mm.
No matter what color you are, no matter how educated you are, no matter wherever you come from, you have to treat every human being with respect and dignity.
So essentially you would want their voting decision to be based on what is the most unifying condition.
Yes.
What unifies the most.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. Yes.
Okay.
When coming to that voting, like Ezimbali was saying that, you know, her mom used to support her dad.
Mm.
I think that's okay. Because, you know, it will feel awkward if her husband supports another party
so
and her wife supports
so
another
I'm
party.
I'm definitely that guy.
I think.
I won't lie to you. That's me.
So your marriage is on the line.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
I am that guy.
Yeah. It's different from children. Children, they can choose their own party, whatever party they want. They feel comfortable
I would
with.
Confuse the life out of my children. On politics, on religion, I would be...
Yeah.
I would argue
I'd pretend I stand for everything.
No, because I think as much as you say that opposing arguments are very important.
Yeah.
You know, it's important to teach kids that even if you're in a relationship, a loving relationship, any kind of relationship, it's possible to disagree.
Mm.
And it actually maybe is healthy. But on the right things, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, money. Let's talk money.
Money. Money.
And I mean, we see how, you know, as adults, I mean, Mbali and I are young adults, and it's really not that easy making good financial decisions.
It's rough.
Right?
Rough. But it's also a habitual thing. It's something, again, like I was saying, so much of who we are as adults is founded in our childhood. And so many of my money values come from my observations around how my parents spent their money, as well as how they treated money in relation to me, you know?
Yes. So what do you think would be very important values to impart to children with regards to money? What do you think is really compulsory for a child to know?
I think a child should know how to save.
Hmm.
Use money wisely. As parents, we should teach our children, like, if a child says, I want this, I want that, you should tell them that we don't have money. If there is no money, there is no money.
Mm.
They should know that whatever they do, you have to work for money. You have to work to have money.
But what if there is money?
If there is money, that is not their money. That's the parents' money.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So they should learn that you have to work to give money. You can't just, if a child wants, today he wants a car, you buy a car. Tomorrow he wants a motorbike, you buy a motorbike. You give them everything. They should learn how to work for their money, and then they should learn how to use it responsibly, and they should learn how to save it.
What are some of the ways in which you think parents are wasting?
I think parents are wasting money on children, buying stuff which they don't use.
Because you see it in the house, right?
Yes.
All day, every day.
Yeah.
You're able to observe that waste.
You
and
know,
so I think you're the right person to comment.
They buy clothes, and kids, they didn't wear those clothes. They just keep piling, going to the shops, buying toys. You find a room full of boxes with toys, which the child doesn't have time to go and play with that toy. But they'll go to the shops, they buy. They buy chocolate. A child just bite it and throw it in a dustbin.
Mm.
Or they'll buy, like, ice cream. They come home and just put it there. It doesn't eat it. What is the point of buying stuff if the child is not going to use it? That's waste. To me, it's waste.
So that waste, you would rather save?
Yes, and you would rather save.
Would you open a bank account or what would you do?
Yeah, I'll open a bank account for the child. But I'm not going to give the card to the child. I'm going to keep it.
Yes.
I'm going to keep it until the child is old enough to know how to use the money, how to use it responsibly, and how to save it. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. So, really quick one. What if your child did really well in school and you had a lot of money and your child did really well in school and they asked you, please, mom, can I have a trip to Paris by myself with my friends? How would you feel about that?
He's still at school.
No, it's matric now. It's matric. They've passed matric.
Okay.
And they want to take a trip to Paris by themselves.
You know, I think if they can go to Paris, they can fly all by themselves. It means that they're old enough to pay for themselves. I don't have to pay for them. No.
That's interesting, though.
No.
That's a really good principle. If you're old enough to do it, then you're old enough to earn it.
Yeah, because if I can't accompany them, it means that now they're old enough to do these things for themselves. So I'm not going to do that.
Brilliant, brilliant. Yeah. Okay, so just fairly quickly, we want to know more about how you would socialize your kids. Say if you were a rich South African housewife, right?
Yeah.
So first of all, would you let your child visit friends in the township?
Yes, I will. But I'll make sure that they are safe.
Okay.
Yes. And I would like to know who they are visiting in the township. So what kind of people they are visiting.
Why do you think that's important, though?
That's very important because you have to know your child that is safe, secure. There is no dangers waiting to happen there.
Oh, no. What I meant is why do you think it's important to let your child go to, if you're a rich housewife, to let your child go to the township?
Okay. That's very important because children should know that there is another life. People live different lives because now the child is exposed to this high life. He should know that there is another life where people don't have things like what he gets at home.
Mm.
Yes.
So it's about perspective.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, no, and I think that helps them to be grateful, right, for what they do have and not to think it's normal.
Yeah, they should.
Okay, and then would you let your child date someone of a different race?
Yeah, I will. It's their choice.
Oh, you just look at
it. It's their choice. Yeah, you know, we don't...
Mind you, actually, Mandla, how old are you? Can you tell them? No, don't be shy. I think it's beautiful.
It's this anti-aging stuff.
I swear. Just how old? Tell us.
I'm 52.
52. Wow. Years
and,
old
and I find you
so
more liberal. More liberal than
so progressive
than most of us younger ones.
You know, we mustn't choose for our children who they have to love or what. That's their choice. Because if they choose to date this person and it's a different race, it's the child who's going to, maybe they end up getting married. It's the child who's going to get married, not a parent. No, it's not a parent who's going to get married. It's your child.
What if it's a different gender?
It's their choice as well. It's their choice. Parents should learn to leave their children live their lives. Not as a parent you want, because I want my child to be married to a certain person like this or a certain race. No, it's their choice. As you, as a parent, you made your own choice to marry the child's father. No one dictated
so,
to you.
You know, children are people, like you were saying. Yeah. Like I was saying earlier, they're candidate adults.
Yeah.
They're people.
Yes. Yeah.
But I mean, essentially, parents are learning from their parents. So maybe they didn't even choose to marry
it's true, it
the
happens
father.
Sometimes.
Who knows?
It's true. Yeah. But I think that's definitely the right attitude. Sure, like I said, it's so progressive, and I think a lot of people will be surprised.
Yeah, and Bailey, actually, you're extremely passionate about children. I know that for sure.
How could you tell?
Do you have any particular takes that you just want to include in discussion?
Sure, Tools, we've touched on a lot.
Yeah.
And I do have a lot to say, but we don't have all the time in the world. So I will say... that the one thing I always have and always will find more messed up than anything else is children's entertainment and toys.
Yeah.
It truly, truly blows my mind how we can be so shocked and so righteous about violence when we hand little boys toy guns pretty much in their cradles. Do you agree, Mandla?
Yeah, I agree.
So shocked.
I agree.
And it also blows my mind in the same token how, as women, we can condemn patriarchy and discrimination, gender discrimination or prejudice when we buy tea sets and aprons for our little girls.
And not for our little boys.
And not for our little boys. You know, and these are, like I said, this is a whole discussion in and of itself, and I really want to have it. But these are our universal principles. And I am truly disturbed, truly, truly disturbed when I walk into a toy shop. I don't know. Like I said, I'm glad you guys agree with me, and I could go on and on about this because for me, in principle, a toy gun and a real gun is the same thing.
It is. And they play games. You know, there is these video games they play. People shooting it.
Yes.
That's wrong. Because that thing, there is getting in their minds that, you know, they should shoot. They can shoot. They can
it
do what...
It teaches your mindset. Yes. Like, it teaches you a combative mindset.
Yeah.
It teaches you an approach, a certain approach to a problem. And we're saying, here's a gun. You can simulate, you can imitate the thing, just as long as no one gets hurt. But it doesn't matter that you're doing the thing in the first place.
But actually, there's a psychologist from America, her name's Sherry Turkle. And she does extensive research on virtual reality versus reality. And how this generation really struggles with the distinction between the two. Because they are exposed to very almost real-looking virtual spaces that look like the spaces where they walk through every single day, so they really can't tell the difference, because they, as they're growing up, they're still learning to differentiate what is reality and what isn't. And so because they're so engrossed in virtual reality that the things that they do in virtual reality, sometimes they impress it on reality because they literally can't tell the difference.
I think they do. And I think, look, it's a character thing, but I think when a lot of psychopaths, a lot of murders and a lot of terrorists snap, you know, it has its roots in that sort of thing, and in how they were socialized and the things that they did in childhood.
Yes.
You know, they never ever leave you. And it's incredibly, incredibly disturbing to think about. And in what world, guys, you tell me, in what world is shooting people, pretending to kill people, in what world is that fun?
No, it's not fun.
Yeah.
It's not fun at all.
For some reason, it's the most normal thing in the world.
It's true.
And we don't see the irony. When we watch the news and it happens in real life, we don't see the irony. Also, have you watched a cartoon recently? Any cartoon?
Not really.
No. But do you know how much ideology, how much dogma and indoctrination they're loaded with? How many ideas and
that's
principles?
So
not to mention unnecessary violence, like we've just mentioned. And after all, these things are written and produced by adults, nostalgic adults. And it's actually a little bit sociopathic if you think about that, if you think about adults creating content for kids and that kind of content. Obviously, you know, if an adult creates content for kids, ideas are gonna creep in. But it's fine, right? Because it's just cartoons, man. And it's just toys, man. And it's just children.
Just lighten up.
Gosh. No, wrong.
But it's going to stick in their minds until they're adults.
Exactly. It's ideology, it's values, and it's future adult generations. That's what it is. And there's nothing just on Jay about it. If you want to see into the future of our species, put down your newspaper for a second. Pick up a toy, play a video game, watch a children's show. Anyway, enough said.
Amazing discussion, right?
Wow. I think it's a wrap, though. Tools, do you have any last words?
I'd just like to really thank Susanna Mandla for being the eyes and ears, you know, that we can't be. I mean, you know, also as young women that are possibly going to have families of our own.
No, it's extraordinary.
Absolutely.
I think you're such an asset. I really hope that I have somebody, I have the privilege of co-parenting with somebody like you one day.
Yes, and that's the perfect word to use.
You're going to make me cry.
No, absolutely.
Thank you.
No, it's absolutely true. Thank you so much. And we have mad respect for you. And thank you all, guys, for joining us. Thank you to my beautiful co-host.
Thank
you
so much,
Cindy.
For listening.
Such an inspiration, such an asset to any conversation. And yeah, we'll catch you guys later. Cliff Central. The revolution. I've got something important to tell you. CliffCentral.com.